Have you ever wondered why we form such deep connections with our dogs? Why they become so much more than just pets, but true members of the family? The answer, partially, lies in psychology. And in this episode of Marketing Made Clear, we're exploring the fascinating concept of the extended self and how it affects everything from our relationships with our dogs to the food that we buy for them. This episode is based off another hugely popular article on the Marketing Made Clear website, which was also published in many of the UK's top dog magazines. The Psychology of Owning a Dog. Dogs as extensions of ourselves.
Let's find out. The marketing game is about to change up. Yeah. Dropping something new in this major. Everything that you need is right here. I'm talking marketing made clear. Go.
I love myself a bit of marketing.
Now, I will warn you, this episode is going to test your attention span. There will be plenty of dogs, so pay attention. Don't look at the puppy, concentrate on the details. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it might be much easier to concentrate, but not as fun.
No.
So I'm assuming that you've heard the saying that dogs look like their owners. But did you know that this saying has been around for a very long time? The idea dates back to at least the 19th century, when people started noticing that certain dog breeds seemed to match their owners in personality and appearance. Looking at some of these images, you can really see why. Even Charles Darwin, friend of Marketing Made Clear, wrote about how dogs and other animals could display expressions similar to humans, reinforcing the ideas of shared resemblance. Why are you so angry, Charles? Charles? Well, I guess we'll find out later. Several studies have actually proven that dogs and their owners often resemble each other, and here's why. Number one, people choose dogs that look like them. A famous 2004 study by psychologist Michael Roy at the University of California found that people can often match dogs to their owners just by looking at photos. In the study, participants correctly paired photos of dogs and owners over 60% of the time, proving that the resemblance wasn't just random. Number two, facial features and expressions. Humans have an innate preference for familiarity. So when choosing a dog, it's likely that they're subconsciously drawn to breeds that share similar features to them, like long or short hair, facial hair, big or small eyes, similar expressions, or even similar face shapes. This is known as the mere exposure effect. In psychology, the more familiar something seems, the more we like it. This theory explains that when a person is subjected to repeated exposure of a stimulus, even without conscious awareness, it will lead to increased preference for that stimulus. In this case, we're talking about features or expressions, but you can apply this theory to wider concepts of marketing too. Number three, personality matching. Other studies show that people choose dogs that reflect their own personality traits. This personality mirroring can lead to perceived physical resemblance over time. Again, the mere exposure effect comes into play, because people are subconsciously drawn to animals that seem more familiar. Number four, similar aging and lifestyle effects. Owners and dogs spend years together, leading to shared habits. Over time, both may develop similar postures, walking styles, or even expressions. Cartoons like Disney's 101 Dalmatians in 1961 played with this idea, showing owners resembling their dogs. Fabulous. So let's bring in the core psychological theory of this episode, the concept of the extended self. The idea that dogs resemble their owners is connected to consumer behavior researcher Russell Belk's extended self theory, which was developed in the 1980s. We are what we own. Big Russ argued that we don't just define ourselves by what's inside us, but also by the things we own and the relationships we form. Think about it, our car, our clothes, even the art we hang on our walls, they all say something about who we are. Pretty as a picture. It's also known as conspicuous consumption. That is, buying and using goods of higher quality, price, or quantity than necessary, primarily to display wealth and status. Most people consider other people's opinions about the things they're buying to some degree, but this takes it to a new level. I'll come back to that in a sec. So for dog owners, our furry companions are one of the strongest extensions of our identity. How dogs reflect their owner's identity. Belk's theory suggests that we extend our sense of self in three ways: individually, within our families, and in our communities. Let's break that down. So, self one is the individual level. Our choice of dog can actually be a reflection of our self-image. For example, some people are drawn to status dogs. These are breeds that symbolize wealth or power or something else. Others pick dogs that match their lifestyle, like an active runner choosing a border collie. And all of the things that we discussed about dogs' similarities to their owners, this all tends to be on an individual level. Then self two is the family level. Dogs don't just live with us, they become part of the family unit. They share our space, they're in our family photos, and we celebrate birthdays with them. Dogs are highly social animals and rely on their owners for care, companionship, and social interaction. This bond is often reinforced through daily routines, training, and play, leading to the majority of dog owners to feel that their pets are indeed members of our family. Finally, self three is the community level. Owning a dog brings people together, from kennel clubs to training groups and dog-friendly meetups. Our pets connect us with like-minded people. We also see dogs play an important role in the community, like police dogs, guide dogs, fire rescue dogs, and all sorts. So in that sense, we can physically see dogs as part of the community. Time to interject a bit more academia. This happy geezer here is Abraham Maslow. Abe was an American psychologist best known for developing the hierarchy of needs, a psychological theory dating back to 1943. The hierarchy of needs is widely accepted and used in marketing, and it outlines five levels of human motivation in a pyramid structure. Number one, at the bottom, is physiological needs. This is basic survival, like food, water, shelter, and sleep. Number two is safety needs, like security, stability, financial and physical safety. Number three is love and belonging, including relationships, friendships, and social connections. Number four is esteem needs, which covers self-respect, recognition, and achievement. Then finally at the top, we've got self-actualization. This is the very top level, covering personal growth, creativity, and fulfilling potential. So people typically progress upwards, but lower needs must generally be met before higher ones become a focus. When I was working on my dissertation for my MBA study, I linked Maslow's theory to the reasons people get their dogs in the first place, which was quite insightful. In a study that I carried out of over 2,000 dog owners, nobody got their dog for physiological needs, which makes sense. Dogs are amazing, but they aren't providing food, water, or shelter for us. But then 9% of people got their dogs for safety needs. Unsurprisingly, the biggest portion of respondents got their dogs under love and belonging needs, whereas just 8% of people got their dog to improve their self-esteem. But the biggest surprise was that as many as 31% of respondents got their dog for their own self-actualization. Remember, that's personal growth, creativity, and fulfilling potential. These findings show that while dogs provide companionship and security, they also play a significant role in personal fulfillment. Maslow's theory helps explain why so many people see their dogs not just as pets, but as key parts of their own growth, identity, and emotional well-being. Okay, onwards to the psychology of buying for our dogs. So moving away from buying a dog in the first place, this idea of pets as an extension of ourselves also affects the products we buy for them. And I find that this is the most interesting part for me. So let's bring back the topic of conspicuous consumption and talk about the concept of Veblen goods, named after the economist Thorstein Veblen. Veblen was an American economist and sociologist from the late 1800s, best known for coining the term conspicuous consumption. So again, this describes how people buy luxury goods to display wealth and social status, which marketing academics call Veblen goods. So along the same lines of the extended self of Belk, Veblen goods are products brought to show off wealth or status. So consumers need to show off these goods, either in public or in conversation. But with the not so recent rise of social media, consumers are increasingly showing off what they are buying online. And yes, that even applies to things like dog food, my favorite topic. But in the pet food industry, we've seen a rise in people sharing what they're feeding to their dogs, particularly on Instagram. Look at all these amazing selections of food, showcasing their dog's health and their food of choice. This is an example of conspicuous consumption. But go back 30 years and this would have been impossible. You could only have displayed this in conversation. Now, okay, this is a test for me linguistically. Karen Shirala, Shirella. But we can thank Karen for exploring the concepts of pets as social extensions based on the construct of extended self in reference to subcultures of dog owners. When pets are seen as a self-extension, powerful subcultures can develop, particularly online, which can be linked to the way that dogs are fed or the breed of dog that people own. And I love exploring subcultures because you can start to observe common behaviours among a subculture, like owning similar dogs or buying a particular type of dog food. This can mean for marketers that it's very difficult to change the behaviour of the subculture as a whole or the individuals within that subculture. But getting back to thinking about the individuals, some dog owners buy premium dog food to reflect their own values about health and wellness. Some fairly old studies like Connors et al. And Shepherd were focused on human food choices, but they hypothesized that if dog owners actively seek to eat organic food for themselves, they're likely to choose an organic or raw diet for their dog. Consumers are starting to apply the same kind of thinking towards buying for dogs as they do for their own products. And a later study by Beck and Katcher, who focused their research on the relationship between humans and their pets, added substance to this. And I have to mention my mortal enemy here, kibble. Dogs being an extension of ourselves, with people projecting their values onto their dog, couples with the real food movement, where consumers are learning how unhealthy ultra-processed foods are for us. And this has led people to question, why am I feeding my dog this unhealthy, ultra-processed and often synthetic food that will outlive cockroaches in an apocalypse? Like, would you want to eat the same ultra-processed food day in, day out? Probably not, and neither does your dog. So people are moving away from habitually buying cheap foods like kibble and buying freshly prepared, biologically appropriate foods like raw. And that pleases me greatly. The science behind our choices. My MBA study that I mentioned earlier of 2,257 dog owners in 2023 found a strong connection between people's own dietary choices and what they feed their dogs. Almost 50% of the people had the exact same attitude towards ultra-processed food, whether for themselves or their dogs. And nearly 80% of people were within 1 point of similarity in their preferences, which means they pretty much had the same opinion for dogs and for themselves. This supported Schleicher et al.'s 2019 prior findings that 53% of respondents had the same outlook of importance when buying healthy food for themselves or for their pet. This also supports earlier research that showed dog owners tend to project their own values onto their pets, making emotionally driven choices a seriously powerful consumer driver. This usually makes marketers' ears prick up because emotion can be utilized as a strong driver to drive consumer action. Just to reinforce this point, various studies have shown that vegans are more likely to feed their dogs a plant-based diet, even though dogs are naturally carnivorous. This highlights how personal beliefs shape what we buy for our pets. I must say though, I'm aware that there are many vegans out there that feed their dog a perfectly species-appropriate meat-based diet too. What the research shows is just that they are more likely than non-vegans to feed a vegetarian diet to their dogs. The future of dog ownership and nutrition. As human nutrition trends continue to evolve, we can expect pet food to follow the same path. That means a greater shift towards natural diets, including raw feeding. The research I referred to earlier for my MBA showed a slight preference for owners to avoid highly processed foods for their dogs in comparison to themselves. In other words, people would rather feed their dogs better food than for themselves. For companies, this is a clear signal. Dog owners are becoming more health conscious, not just for themselves, but for their pets too. Products that match a consumer self-image have a greater probability of purchase, as the purchase contributes to the self-concept. So the move away from ultra-processed foods is happening. Uh-oh, Charlie Darwin is here and he's not happy. That's right, Chaz. Adapt or die. I'm looking at you, ultra-processed dog food companies. Thank you, Charlie. So what does this mean for us as dog owners? Well, our relationship with our pets is deeply personal. They are an extension of who we are. And as we learn more about nutrition and well-being, our choices will continue to evolve. But most interestingly, for marketers, it means that consumer decisions, especially in the pet space, are no longer just about function or necessity. They're a powerful reflection of identity, emotion, and values. For marketers, tapping into this extended self-connection unlocks a unique opportunity. If you can align your product with how someone sees themselves or wants to be seen, you're not just selling a product, you're becoming part of their story. My goodness, that's profound. My goodness, that's profound. So, do you feed your dog based on your own values and beliefs? Or maybe you're a marketer in this industry. What insights can you offer? Again, for all of this, please let me know in the comments. If you enjoyed this video, please check out the article on marketingmadeclear.com. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell for marketing brain dumps. See you next time. Thank you.